Welcome to the Wellness Renaissance Podcast, exploring topics to help you find the pieces that fit into your health puzzle. Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for listening and checking out the episode today. As usual, we have a really cool conversation. This one is with Jim Noss. Jim is a Duluthian here in Duluth, Minnesota. And I met Jim years ago when I started my food group. I used to have a food group that met once a month in Duluth here that was open to the community. And it was for folks who had food sensitivities to basically share information and ideas and resources and all that fun stuff. And Jim was a consistent member of the group all through the whole thing, which was great. He always had so much information to share and just so many great experiences. He spoke for my group on various topics. He did a few food demos, which were amazing. We had a blender off, which was a Vitamix, and I can't remember what the other blender was, and made a bunch of different foods for people to try of varying types of foods. And it was amazing, some of the stuff that Jim brought to us and shared with us and inspired. He also did a coconut themed food demo of all different types of things with various types of aspects of coconut, which was pretty amazing and really, really tasty, I have to say. You will hear that Jim has been on his own very long health journey, from being sick as a kid to various things going on as an adult, and then a really intensive bout with Lyme disease a few years ago that he basically took his health into his own hands, and he's doing really well now. And he will talk about that and what he's doing, what he's eating, and how he's doing it, and how he's thinking. There is a lot in here to be inspired by. And like I said, Jim, taking his health into his own hands, it's come from a lot of studying, and he will talk about who he has read and studied and visited and experienced a bit in this conversation as well. And he'll talk about this in the conversation that he isn't a medical practitioner. He's not a practicing coach. He has a lot of hard hours and practical experience on himself and his family as far as that goes. So we are fortunate to have him here and to share his story and his experience and knowledge with us. So I hope you do find some inspiration and some pieces that you can take away from this, because I think there's really a lot of great stuff in here. So we're going to dive right into the conversation. He's going to share his history and kind of give us the base of understanding of where he comes from. And then we're going to get cooking with what's going on now. So I, like I said, really hope you enjoy. All right. Okay. Well, let's dive in, Jim. Okay. If you want to talk about your health journey, your story, how it all began, and you've got some amazing knowledge and training and continued self-studying and discovery of what's out in the world and of yourself. And yeah, I just want to hear about that.
Well, thank you. And I'd like to start by saying thank you for allowing me to be here. And I think that the opportunity to share is a great thing. And for you to be the person to offer that opportunity for people to share, I want to be in total support of what you're doing and what is out there for learning. And I guess I would define myself as a self-learner or a lifelong learner. And I've always been kind of slow on the uptake. And sometimes that realization has allowed me to push myself further than what I would normally do. And so by understanding that seeing information for the first time doesn't necessarily make me knowledgeable in that information, and that studying it and understanding it to a level that I can apply it in my life is a whole other set of effort. There's a new kind of effort from learning something and hearing it and then taking it and applying it in my life or applying it to the situation that I'm in. And so not all tools are appropriate for all situations. And trying to be good at listening and understanding where I'm at in relationship to anything before grabbing onto something else.
That's kind of a whole process in and of itself. right?
Yes, it is. And that's, again, I think why we're here today, mm-hmm. is because we're in that process. And today's a great day to share your process and to try to understand where you're at a little more. And I think that understanding how powerful our local community is and how many gifts are right at our fingertips, mm-hmm. if we know how to ask and we know where to look, they're there. And so many times that's the hardest part when you're not feeling well, or if you're in a stressful situation, or if you're feeling disease, that dis-ease or disease, your motivation, your inspiration is kind of the first thing that you lose track of, or that isn't as strong as what it would normally be.
Mm-hmm.
And understanding that and seeing that has helped me, again, push through and say, okay, well then, what is about right now that's inspiring? If I'm not going to go outside of myself, let's be good to myself first.
Mm-hmm.
So my first experience with disease or illness was before I was as tall as the kitchen counter. I remember my mother giving me what she called horse pills. She would tell the doctor that the size of a horse pill. Why are you making my kid take this horse pill? But I wasn't even as tall as the counter. And I had skin irritations and drainage. I had scars on the top of my head, across my arms. And I was 4 or 5 years old.
Wow.
And so that was a struggle. I was diagnosed with being allergic to the sun, allergic to fabric softeners and detergents. And this is 1970, before we really understood a lot about allergies. And of course, my mom took it personally and thought she was doing it wrong. And the doctors were trying to tell her what, you know, how she should do things to help me. There's more to the story. And she worked very hard at trying to keep a healthy family. And that attached us to every specialist and every doctor across the state of Ohio. Lots of long drives to specialists. And it never really got figured out. And the hope was that I would grow out of it.
Mm.
And I think I did. I don't think the medicines ever really did anything except for give me constipation and make me irritable and mood swings and a lot of crazy things that happened by being on medicine.
Wow.
Being on those kind of medications at such a young age. And so that was even before I entered school. And then as I got into school, I, you know, would suffer symptoms, and my shirt would be wet from dripping snot. My arms would just be scaly and scabby, and I just was had a lot going on in my own world. That school just was just another threat to me. Mm. It was very hard to get into learning and in school because of the environment that I was dealing with. I guess I had distractions, and it's interesting. Yeah, that's interesting when we call kids ADD or have attention deficit. Well, maybe there is distractions that are causing that. You know, mm-hmm. there's things going on that make them that way.
Right.
And so at about age 10, I realized another connection with my stomach health and my food. And I discovered that every Sunday my mom would make a pork chop or some sort of pork roast. And every Sunday afternoon, I would be sick on the toilet, not understanding why I was so sick. And I have memories of being in the bathroom with the window open on the downstairs floor and hearing my neighbors and family members playing outside with just my arms wrapped around my stomach, you know, just sick. And it wasn't very much longer after having that realization that I stopped eating pork, and that symptom went away. And so that was another connection between what's going on in my world and my symptoms, or how I feel. And so I guess those were the seeds that were planted at a very young age, that then as I got into sports and school and girls and everything else, I never really paid attention to any of that stuff from junior high through high school. And then after high school, I was very fortunate to get a great job, did a lot of traveling, did a lot of work with people, and learned a lot about business and business development, personal development. And I learned that rule that you get out of things what you put into them. Mm-hmm. And that the harder you work at the things that you're focused on, and the more clear you are about your goals, the more success you will have towards those goals. And that personal development really helped me in my professional life, but it didn't help me in my health and personal life. And I never applied it to that. And mm-hmm. so as I grew older, had all the same kind of symptoms everyone else was suffering, a little bit overweight, the allergies, and was always on an antihistamine, always doing different things in the summertime for my allergies, different things in the wintertime for my eczema. And so I really started turning my awareness of putting in and getting out, instead of in a business way, into a health way. And the first book I ever read was 1991. I read a book called Fit for Life by Harvey and Marilyn Diamond, and they talked about natural hygiene as a practice in health and nutrition. And up until that point, I had no clue that there was any connection in a bigger sense to what I was eating and the number of pounds I carried on me and the health that I had. And so, being fairly young at the time and impressionable still, I didn't feel as though I had it all figured out. I applied the theories that was in that book. And it was a lot of plant-based eating, simple foods, food combining, not eating certain foods with other foods. And in that book, they shared, of course, a number of references of other doctors and people that ran clinics that taught these same things. And so I rolled up my sleeves and followed through with all those references. Any name, any doctor or person that they use as a reference in that book, Fit for Life, I then checked out those books at the library and read those and got into the periodicals and other issues of like magazine articles and things, and would follow up with that, and found a correspondence course in natural health and hygiene. Took that course, really loved it. Decided that I was going to become a naturopathic doctor. This is back in 1992. Uh-huh. And so I went to school to get a biology degree and took the correspondence courses in nutrition, holistic health and nutrition. And from that point forward, I really focused my attention and energy on finding my most healthy self. And that seemed to be pretty consistent. What I implemented from what I learned and the benefits that I received were pretty consistent. I lost lots of weight. I felt much better. I slept better. I never was inclined to take an antacid like a Tums or any of those kinds of things anymore. I really felt much better right out of the box. I was young and I responded really well. Mm-hmm. And then getting into school and meeting new friends and having a college life after already have graduated from high school and having a professional life, and then going back to college, I kind of lost my motivation. Dating was probably the biggest thing that was really complicated, to go on a date in a restaurant and explain my diet. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times I would just order off the menu and forget about it. Mm-hmm. And so symptoms come back and the process starts all over again. And I hear that story from so many people, and so many people punish themselves and say, oh man, I'm doing so wrong by myself. And that's the new message that I like to give, is everyone does that. Everyone, we all have our stronger moments and our weaker moments, and they're all perfect. And whatever helps you to stay on the strong side is what you need to do. And the first thing is to not blame yourself and to not get down on yourself, because that's not going to help you make better choices necessarily. So after getting a degree in biology, I realized that naturopathic medicine was probably not going to be for me. A lot more money to borrow, a lot more time in my life. Already being a non-traditional student, I wasn't going to do that, take that kind of investment for something that wasn't necessarily my calling, it didn't seem like the slam dunk I thought this information was going to be for people. There was more to it than that. It wasn't quite as simple as I thought. That telling people how to eat wasn't going to make them eat that way. All the logic in the world.
Right. Well, and from your own experiences, exactly how hard that is when you want to just be quote unquote normal in the world and figure out how to live your daily life and take care of yourself is an interesting balance. So you wanted the information that you would get from studying naturopathic medicine, but not necessarily to grow up and be the doctor.
Yeah, that's okay. A really good way to put it. Yeah. And so I turned my biology degree into, I went back to school and got an education degree so that I could learn how I learn and how people learn, so that I could be a better teacher. And that worked wonderfully. And I ended up with a biology earth science secondary education degree.
Okay.
That all of it applies. I haven't found any contradiction between natural health and biology in academic form. There's been no, well, this is how they say your body works at University of Akron, and this is how the alternative healthcare provider sees the body working. There's most of it is pretty consistent. It's maybe some of the areas where we neither one understands some of the things that are happening that are the most significant, and agreeing on our own ignorance or our own misunderstanding is sometimes the hardest part. I think a lot of professionals would never admit that they don't know something because their profession relies on it.
Right.
And maybe all those types of things have kept me in this limbo between an official professional and someone that just is passionate about it. So after graduating with a secondary degree, I went into teaching and still studying, and would go as much as I could put myself in the environment of health education. And I would go to different classes or workshops and weekend retreats and different things, and network with a lot of really cool people that were either in the profession training other people or were suffering from a certain illness that were looking for results. And that was another turning point for me to understand the scope and spectrum of all of us in a whole community of suffering, and how many of us are in the same boat but feeling so isolated and so alone. And so that brought me to a whole other layer of my learning, and that was my spiritual consciousness and what I believe and what I think is also part of my health picture, which then just adds a whole other layer that is really hard to have a container around, or to use double-blind tests, or to have any kind of scientific thing. And we know from many years of history and research that the placebo effect is a very real thing, and it does work. So how do you incorporate that into this art of healing? And along this journey of dating and all that stuff, I found a wife and have a partner, and now have two young children and are trying to raise those children in the same model as what we believe in American society, that maybe not as clear on what their health picture should look like, and trying to explain that to a 10-year-old or a 5-year-old or a 3-year-old has been a constant learning process. And then in 2013, I was hiking in Solon Springs, Wisconsin, and wasn't aware of the amount of ticks in the area, and had shorts on and a t-shirt, and just... So I contracted Lyme disease, had full-blown symptoms, off the chart. I couldn't believe the amount of pain I was in. It was definitely life-changing. The symptoms just went on, and the joint pain and skin irritation, the mental anxiety, I mean, it was really bad. And so that sent me on a whole nother mission of searching alternative routes to healing this pretty common at this point disease. When I first was learning about it, as I was contracted and with it, it was like 10 times what we thought. I don't remember the numbers. We thought there was 1,200 cases of Lyme disease in Minnesota, and we turn out there's 12,000 cases of. I mean, it was like adding numbers to the back of what we knew. And so diagnosing it is really hard. Treating it is really hard. All those things that in between. So it was really the testing ground for my belief in anti-inflammatory, plant-based, basic nutrition. And for me, it worked out. I don't know if it would work out for everyone, but I was able to. It was a 12-month period of suffering, 8 months that were debilitating. I mean, I was, for 8 months, there was no way I was to be able to go to work or take care of the kids or really do much, because my back was so stiff, my knees were so stiff, my skin was on fire. I couldn't really even put clothes on, because anything that touched my skin was painful.
Wow. So let me ask you a little bit more about that, because that is something that I know comes up and people are really in their own experiences or in trying to figure it out or trying to heal themselves. So how much, and however much you're willing to share, of just like when you figured out the diagnosis, how much was your education that you had done, and how much was Western medicine and the doctor protocol? Like, where did you take that and run with it, and what help did you get there? And then where did you take it kind of on your own education and learning?
That's a really good question. There were lots of loving and caring people in my life at the time that saw this clearly as a slam dunk Lyme disease. Go to the doctor, get your protocol of antibiotics, and take care of this. Mm-hmm. And I was resistant to that. I was resistant to that because of my experience with antibiotics previous to that. I had had very little antibiotics, probably 10 years previous to getting Lyme disease. And the two times that I had taken antibiotics, I had terrible reactions, you know, intestinal pain and things that I guess most people would just say, well, why not? I mean, you're taking a medicine, you're going to have, your bowels are going to get messed up, or you're going to have, well, for me, I was at a place that my health mattered so much that I didn't want to experience that. Mm. And so knowing that, I instantly went towards whatever alternatives I could.
Okay.
So I didn't take any antibiotics at all during the whole process,
okay,
which was very irritating to three or four nurse friends of mine, even the people that I considered alternative healthcare providers, like acupuncturists and chiropractors, would say, Jim, don't be a fool. Go to the doctor. So I never was really officially diagnosed, although, you know, from what I understand of the tests, there's multiple tests and not all of them are very accurate. I did have the bullseye that is an indication that you have it,
right.
But I had one on my back, one on my side, and one on my leg.
Ooh.
Yeah. I had picked off ticks off my ankles, off my legs, and off my neck. So I had nymphs. I probably had 13 nymphs on my one ankle that I picked off.
Wow.
So I was in the woods with them for a period of time, and then I literally, for some reason, was oblivious. I did not think about the fact that I could be contracting Lyme disease. So I didn't shower, I didn't like detick myself or anything. And from the time that I took that hike, it was exactly 2 weeks till the point where the symptoms just completely overtook me.
Okay.
So there was that dormant stage for 2 weeks, which I think is pretty common for when people explain it. And as far as I understand, the tick secretes some kind of a chemical that shuts off your immune system in the initial bite. And then at that point, when the spirochete enters your system is kind of at a suppressed state, so the spirochetes can kind of make homes where they most find fitting, and then when your immune system kicks back on, that's when you get all those symptoms. Oh, okay. So it's that 2-week period of coming back, and what you're experiencing is your body trying to get rid of this. And so the inflammation that you would get, that I would get in my elbows or wrists or knees or ankles, would be that war going on between the good bacteria and the bad guys. And it would start with severe pain, and then it would go to immobility. You wouldn't be able to move those joints. The swelling would go down, and then the pain would leave. And so I always knew where my next swelling would be, because I would feel stiff in that joint, and it would literally roam my body. It would be in my neck for 3 or 4 days, then it would go to my elbows for 3 or 4 days, then in my knees, my hips, and there was always something about it that would just really make it almost impossible to function. You know, it'd be so painful in your knees that you just walking, I would literally crawl to the bathroom, or your hips, and then trying to sleep, I would sleep on a recliner lawn chair in living room, because I couldn't get in and out of my bed without just screaming.
That's so amazing.
Yeah, and amazing what your body can go through.
Right, yeah. Right, and what you can endure, and how much it can take you down, and that you can come back.
And you can come back. Yeah.
So it just kept, like, it wasn't like a one-time through thing. It was up and down. Oh my God.
Every day, every week would be different. And I did start seeing a chiropractor. And the day before the appointment, I would be saying, this is ridiculous. I need to call my doctor and tell him I can't make it, because there's no way I'm going to get out of bed. Uh-huh. And the next morning, for some reason, whatever joint was in that kind of pain and would be restricting my motion would alleviate enough for me to be able to get in the car and get to the doctor and back.
Okay.
But I literally would have to schedule those things, because I wouldn't know if I would be competent enough, capable enough to function.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Out of curiosity, was the chiropractor part of the treatment for Lyme, or was it just what you were doing in general?
It was more of a general thing, okay. But he definitely was helpful in the Lyme component, as far as helping me understand the process and the healing process. Having someone in your corner on your health journey is so valuable. So
right.
Valuable.
Wow. So was it mostly food based, or that you were careful about what you ate or did not eat in that process, or what kind of did you use to get through that?
A lot of that stuff I've probably forgotten by now, but I did restrict my diet. I tried to do no complex sugars or anything that my body might take as harder to digest. I stuck to mostly fruits and vegetables, but I wasn't a strict plant-based eater necessarily at the time. I was eating pizza and what were some of the other favorite things I would eat, just because, mac and cheese maybe a couple of times back then, not very often. But at that point is when I decided that I needed to cut that stuff out, so I really cut out all inflammatory foods, if you will, which included meat and dairy and flour. And I upped my fruits and vegetables, and I was on a number of anti-inflammatory herbs, turmeric and ginger. I took those in capsules and I put them in my food. I would sprinkle turmeric in my salad. I would put pieces of ginger in my juice. I did a lot of that. And then I did a few other herbal protocols from different things I found online. Burdock root was the one that would help me with a lot of pain. And when I was in just this suffering place, it would at least let me sleep or give me a little bit of a break. And then there were a number of other things that I would try that I don't know how much they really helped or what they did at the time, but it gave me something to do and some hope, I guess. And then the biggest thing that is probably may or may not make the the podcast is the coffee enemas. Coffee enemas was the best thing for pain relief.
Really?
Yeah.
That's so interesting.
Isn't it interesting? And I read that from another doctor that used it, and the story goes that in World War II that the nurses would run out of painkiller medicine and they would have these big urns of leftover coffee from the doctors not drinking all the coffee during their shifts, and they started giving enemas. Back then, enemas were way more common and people understood them and weren't as fearful of them. Mm-hmm. Started giving them to the people that were in the most amount of pain, and it worked. And so in that setting, they started doing research and studying the effects of this coffee, and they've identified a couple of different chemicals in the caffeine that help your liver detox, which then helps your blood clean, which then helps relieve the pain.
And so, because I think I first heard of coffee enemas like years and years ago, and I heard about them a lot, and now I don't hear about them hardly at all anymore. Do you know, because I'm thinking about the coffee concept, right? Mm-hmm. Versus the drinking, versus the enema. Is it the tissue that allows that to pull into the body, detox, and go back? Like, I'm thinking of, why does the enema work better than just drinking a ton of coffee?
Right, yeah. I guess it sounds kind of weird, but it's up instead of down. You know, it's coming up through your system instead of down. So the filters that your stomach and your digestive system give things through your acids and things change the constitution by the time it hits your intestines, where coming the other way, it comes through a different portal.
Okay, so it isn't getting the same digestion. It's not getting pulled apart. It's more in its truer form.
That's okay. I guess understanding the differences, I know that caffeine restricts, it's a dilator, right? It'll constrict your vessels, which will like relieve a headache, and how they say when people are trying to get off of caffeine, they'll experience extreme headaches, and that's that because their cells aren't being constricted like the caffeine would do. On the other side, when you enema it, I don't know if there is any of that at all, in that system. I work with people that do it, and I have had people say that they do feel jittery, that they feel some sort of a caffeine effect from an enema.
Okay.
But I don't know how that would not help, but I know that people that drink coffee have bowel movements. It's definitely something. But from what I understand of the coffee enema, it's not necessarily cleaning your colon, although it will because you're putting the fluid into that space, but it's more drawing from your liver. It's detoxing your liver through the portal vein.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And there's lots of research on it. There's definitely lots of research, and there's lots of people sharing information about it. So, and there's a preferred kind of coffee, of course, and there's a brewing method, and there's an amount and a concentration.
Right. We're not just taking Folgers here.
Right. You're not brewing a cup of coffee in your coffee pot and pouring in there.
It's an interesting distinction because I'm always fascinated in general when we see studies about coffee in how benefits or doesn't benefit us. I'm always interesting, okay, what kind of coffee did you use? Because there's a lot of different aspects of coffee as to the quality of coffee, how it was taken care of that might affect our health, right?
Yeah.
And how many chemicals are naturally in it, and how many come from processes and all that stuff. So
that is wonderful. That is really good. And that is really what it's about. What you just said is exactly what I try to do with everything. Is okay, we hear it as this one statement, blanket statement, but how many shades of gray and different perspectives are there? And we learn that with meat and with dairy and with other things. When someone says, this is bad, well, which bad are you talking about? And why? And
yes.
Where does it come from that it's bad? And if this is good and this is bad, then why are some people that you say this is good for can't get along with it, and other people that you say this is bad for do it and have no negative consequences?
Right, and that's where the interplay of understanding the nuances of those studies and what's being used and how it's being done is so important, and we don't have the time as normal citizens to figure that stuff out.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
But
we can only put it in a container of how much we understand,
right,
and say, okay,
That's... Right. And if we do have time, go, you know, bless you, because it's a gift. It's a gift to be able to figure some of those pieces out, because it is, yeah, it's right. The nuances of the understanding. If you're using, well, and we think of nutrition when we talk about nutrition and how tests, when you listen to people who have really studied and have gotten frustrated, it's like, well, but when we study nutrition, we have to study the isolated molecule. Everything needs, you know, to have a proper double blind placebo, everything has to be exactly the same, which means you use powdered eggs or you use one particular isolated nutrient, which means you don't get the big picture of what the whole food actually does or what type of food actually does. And that's why I think we're so lost in nutrition, is there's all this information, but when it's, you know, when it has to be taken in pieces and parts, we're not
right
getting the whole deal.
Right. I think that's what advertisers understand. And so many times we get given a word and then given values around that word that make it meaningful so that we can be sold a product.
Right.
And the idea of protein, carbohydrate, and sugar, I couldn't think of three more better things that have huge spectrums. When you say sugar, you're talking about a carbon-hydrogen chain. And that can be a million things.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing with a carbohydrate or a protein. You know, it's just amazing. But then once we learn something, we think we have to do it that way based on what we just learned, when in fact, maybe there's another thing more to learn that would help us understand it and apply it.
Right.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. It's so hard to really, who has the time, you're saying? Who has the time to really understand all this stuff? You have to take what you're learning and apply it with confidence and understanding. And sometimes, how do we know what information is going to give us the results that we've been convinced it will?
Right.
Does that make any sense? Yeah.
Well, yeah, right. We've been told and sold a story, but what part of that information is actually helpful to us, and what part of that information, but in another way, the next 2 or 3 steps down the road is actually helpful or knowingly not helpful. I think it's interesting too, when I think of studies, when we look at when they're able to have huge studies, and I know this kind of flies in the face of science, but I still think there's a thought process to go behind it. When we've got some of these studies, especially when it comes to food and nutrition, and there's a bunch of people in the study, that really probably means, when we look at it, that they were able to make something very consistent. So everybody was doing the same thing. Not always. I mean, obviously, some studies can be bad, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then you look at the small studies sometimes that weren't exactly able to be double-blind placeboed, but if you could find out what they were actually doing in the small study, that might actually give you more real information than some of the big studies, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's, how does the average person do this? I mean, you have spent an amazing amount of your life doing, studying, and learning so much, and which is great. I mean, it's awesome, but it's hard to duplicate.
Right. And now, as I'm getting older, I'm realizing how much I already have forgotten.
Isn't that a frustrating thing?
Right.
Yes.
So picking and choosing what you remind yourself, you know, and what you want to revisit, and the priorities of what you know to be important to you, is a very individual thing. And that's the hard part with trying to keep up with the Joneses or being, you know, this new information now. So now how do I incorporate that into what I already know? And then there's new information. And there's lots of great people putting stuff online, like you and other people, that are constantly trying to support those people that are want to learn those things that maybe are going to save us a little time.
Right.
So if someone can study those 3,000 journals so you don't have to.
Yeah, right. And then understand them maybe and have a lens that might match your own lens. I think that's sometimes when we're looking for the people that we match up with, that we kind of trust and listen to, you have this understanding that they're kind of looking at things through a lens that you can understand and make sense of and agree with.
Hmm.
And it's all a learning curve. Oh,
it
my
is.
Gosh.
It
yeah.
is. It is.
So you got rid of the lime, finally.
Mm-hmm.
And
I don't think you get rid of it. I guess you remiss it, or
okay.
You make it so that there's nothing for it to feed on. There's nothing for it to fight. It seems like that people with rheumatoid arthritis, people with other things that are kind of symptomatically similar to Lyme disease, all have those opportunities for relief or just not have symptoms at any given time. And that has happened without medication, without having some kind of a pill I have to take to keep myself healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the most beautiful thing. Right now, I am not taking one pill of any sort, not one. Not any pharmaceutical drugs, not any vitamins or minerals or homeopathic remedies or any of those sorts. I eat a very simple diet that keeps me healthy, and I don't suffer from any consequences from my diet at this time. But I'm sure if I went back to a standard American diet, all my symptoms would come right back. I'm so sure of it, not because I'm not afraid of it. It's because I live it and I experience it. And if I would 3 days in a row get a little further from my diet than I normally would, maybe I'm not have as much access to fruit as I had, or that there's 3 birthday parties in a row, I will feel stiffness in my knees, or I'll get a little swelling in my elbow. It's just, and of course, that could be totally in my head, because I know the power of the placebo.
Right.
But I know that my thoughts create my health as well as the food I eat. And so I'm continually telling myself, my body's healing. My body's healing. It's always a self-righting tool. Your body is always going to want to get healthy. And when we think that it's going to be a doctor, it's going to be a pill, guess where we put the power? In that doctor and in that pill.
Mm-hmm.
We're not putting it in our own system that can heal. And I think that we all feel dysfunctional at times. We're all born with inadequacies or things that are not quite healthy. Like my story, I was, right out of, as a young child, suffered all kinds of sicknesses. So it's really easy to believe that my body's just not cut out for this, and that I'm going to always depend on this or that. But I think that as we simplify and really get to the basics of what we're eating for, the reasons we're eating, and what the power of our food really has for us, it changed my life. I can't even define how it's changed my life. That's how much it's changed my life.
We live in a very powerful society with the standard American diet, and wanting to function as quote unquote whatever normal looks like, be in the world, do the, like you're saying, the dating thing, just hanging out with friends. And we have a culture and corporations telling us things should look different than maybe we even want them to look. So talk about a little bit, if you're willing to share, the simplicity of your diet. What is working for you?
What works for me is a very simple diet. I think, that overplayed quote, "Let food be thy medicine and medicine be thy food," from Socrates is right on. And there's another quote that...
Is it Socrates or Hippocrates?
Socrates had a couple other really good quotes too that I was thinking of at the time. But the another ancient quote that I like is, "You live on a quarter of what you eat, and your doctor lives on the other 3/4."
That's very timely.
So that's probably the biggest thing I do, is I try to limit my appetite. And how I do that is I start with water in the morning, and I eat fruit as long as I can during the day. And when I get hungry, that's when I'll actually introduce a more substantial meal. And it's usually a salad. So from the time I get up until 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon, all I've put in my body is water, fruit, and greens. And then after that, I will, loosen my reins. Because if I can get through that much of the day even if I'm starved at 4 o'clock, how much can I eat by the time I'm done eating of the day and I get to start all over again the next day with that restricted diet? And that has helped me understand my appetite, understand how much emotional eating I do, how many calories that I'm putting in my body just because it feels good, not because it's the nutritious thing to do. And so if I'm really hungry, I'll eat 3 bananas, 3 oranges, 2 apples, and a whole thing of raspberries. If I'm super starved and can't go without food, I'll just stick to more fruit in that period of time. And then in the later day, oatmeal. I always try to eat high fiber foods. I would say I'm similar to the person that is a protein conscious eater, but I replace the word protein with fiber.
Okay.
So I'm always looking for the most fiber in my food. And I know that that's a prebiotic. We talk about probiotics, we talk about all these other things. Fiber is what's really important in our diet. And so my transition to get to this place was staying on water as long as I can. And then as soon as I can't look at another glass of water, then start on fruit and eat as much, try to stay on fruit as long as I can till I can eat another piece of fruit, and then move on from that. And in the beginning, it was, like I say, lots of bananas, lots of oranges, apples, whatever I could afford. And then as my appetite started to understand what I was doing, then it was a banana, a orange, a apple. And now I can do water till 11:30, 12 o'clock in the afternoon, and then I'll have a couple pieces of fruit. And it's all really managing my appetite first, and then making sure I focus my what I do eat on the healthy things. Mm-hmm. So allowing myself to veer from my diet, I wasn't challenging my diet by eating a piece of cake. I just allowed it, and how I did it was I allowed it by eating my fruit, drinking my water, and doing my salad, and now let it happen. And so if I would eat something that might be inflammatory or bad for me during one day, the next morning I knew I was back to water and fruit. And that has seemed over the time as I've continually felt better and better. And even beyond the Lyme disease, my lower back stiffnesses that everybody experiences as they get older, or other cough or sinus infections or drainage, things like that that were just a constant part of my life before are no longer. And now when I wake up with a runny nose and sinuses, I look back at what I had the night before and I can usually find something there that I'm now excreting, if you will, or dispensing of. High sodium is probably the one thing that I notice is when I eat popcorn at a movie before I go, the night before, have popcorn and watch a movie, the next morning I can feel that drainage from the sodium and the salt in the popcorn. And that's salt, sugar are two big things, and oil. Salt, sugar, and oil are the three things that I found most inflammatory for me.
Interesting.
And the things that I would stay away from. And isn't it funny that the high fiber foods don't have any of those things, or have very little, And so when you stick with the fiber foods, you're not going to get a lot of other synthetic bad things because the fiber is part of the plant, part of the nutrition that we get. And all fruit have various different kinds of health benefits that science has now proven. Different colors, eat your colors, the tomato, the red and the tomato, all those kinds of things that are so wonderful. So that's probably my diet has been my focus for a long time. And I think that not being focused on your diet is probably a healthier way to do it. A little less stress, a little easier to go.
But you're also trying to manage maintaining your health,
right?
Too, which
right.
Once somebody gets there and they discover that and they discover what works for them, then it's a whole different thing, right. Because then it's like, then you know what right. you're doing
right.
too. You
right.
know what's working yeah. for you. I did this yeah. for many people, and myself included. Some of it's the, if I knew exactly what to eat, I would do exactly that.
Right.
You know,
right.
and I, but once people can experiment oh. and play with that, as I continue to, you know, mm-hmm. you figure, okay, that's not working.
Right.
And then try to put the good stuff in. And if we can focus on the good stuff and make that the priority for the day, it leaves a lot less room for the quote-unquote bad stuff,
yeah.
the less
yeah.
desirable stuff.
Yeah.
So I just, a couple things I want to ask you about, too. So you mentioned cake.
Right.
Like, and so just in a realistic or a general for you experience, how often are those treats for you?
I would say every month I have some really good treats. I wouldn't say it's a weekly thing, but monthly I would say I'm gonna be in a social situation or be in a emotional state or something that it's gonna, all the stars will align. I'll have access to it. It'll be on my counter, or I'll be at somebody's home that it's available, and I'll be in a place that I feel, this is now, if not now, when, you know, that kind of a thing. And so the being with people and not trying to separate myself from them, that's a lot of the reason, you know, is if we're all doing it, then I'll do it too at that time. But I don't go out of my way for it, but I do have cravings, you know, probably donuts. I would say I probably have a donut every month.
Yeah.
We shouldn't talk about food.
It's dangerous.
So yeah, okay. I'm not as strict as I used to be without as many symptoms too. I think just the idea of having a sad diet or eating a lot of junk food when I was sick would make me feel bad. It was just I never looked forward to celebrating with food because my symptoms and my goal was to try to use food to try to heal me. So at that time it was really, there was a lot of baggage around what good food is and what bad food is.
Sure.
And now I'm trying to not see it as good and bad and just see it as choices and a flow of choices.
And what's going to keep you right. in stasis.
Right. And so as listeners would, if you're thinking of curing something, that's a completely different idea around food than if you're trying to manage what's already happening in food. If you're trying to lose weight or feel better, sleep better is a really big one for me. I think people don't understand how much nutrition and their quality of sleep are connected. Then you're going to want to try to maybe go a little further than what someone that just is trying to, doesn't want to feel as unhealthy, you have an ache or pain or something like that. That's a completely different, if you're using nutrition, there's a long learning curve and a process to do that. I would think that not everyone is going to have the desire to understand and learn like I do, that like you're saying, you would tell me what to do and I'll do it, you know, and just give me the course of action and I'll play with it. Where I guess I wasn't ever in a place like that. I was more in the place of, I want to learn this and I want to figure this out for myself because I'm not sure I trust what other people
right.
are going to tell me. And that, I guess, led me down a completely different road.
Right. Yeah. No, I want the body printout. I want it just to spit out and go, okay, this is what's good for you. This is what isn't good for you.
Right.
Make it, give me some feedback. Sometimes yeah. the feedback isn't always clear, where when you have those really acute things going on, like you're saying, I think this is a really good point too. It is the really cleaning up your diet in a very pure and consistent way that doesn't have to be a lifelong sentence. But it can be the way through to get to figure out what the next step is. But it gives your body a reset
yep.
and lets you move some things through to kind of go, okay, what is the next step and what's realistic for me? So
yep.
especially people who are in a really bad place.
Exactly. And that's the hardest time is when you're in a bad place. You know?
Right.
Yeah.
Having those tools to draw on if something does yeah. happen, if nothing else.
Yeah. Yeah. If it wasn't for the internet, if it wasn't for podcasts and blogs and YouTube videos, I would never have been able to effectively and quickly, as quickly as I have and as inexpensively I have amass the kind of information I have. Right. My library card is worn out. I spend a lot of time at the library, a lot of time on YouTube videos. That has been just a gift that technology is such a wonderful thing.
Right.
That we have this, we can share this information and have it be available for anyone over indefinite period of time.
Yeah, the access is amazing. It's filtering through the access.
It is. That's the filter that is amazing. That's the thing that I guess I'm behind the curve on, because I'm just excited about the information, but now it's like, how do you choose the information?
Yes, it's crazy.
It gets bigger and bigger.
Do you have a few people that you might want to just toss out and saying, here's some people that have been really helpful in your journey?
Yeah, sure, I would love to do that. The people that I've studied, that I literally went to their clinics and learned from them firsthand, Dr. Gabriel Cousins had the Tree of Life in Patagonia, Arizona, where he treats thousands of people and uses a simple diet, and diabetes was his main focus. And Max Gerson was back in the early 1900s, came to the United States from Germany, and he has a Gerson therapy that he worked with cancer patients back in the 30s, and still has a college, an education school for people that have family members that have cancer. You can go there and learn his protocol and apply it. That's one of the doctors that uses the coffee enemas, where I learn about coffee enemas. And then there are a number of YouTuber guys that are really, really good. There's Lauren Lachman, who has a clinic in Costa Rica, and his Tanglewood is the name of his clinic. And there's another YouTuber that has a book, How Not to Die, Dr. Mm-hmm. Michael Greger, and he has a YouTube channel, nutritionfacts.org, that he has 4 minute. If you can listen to someone talk really fast for 4 minutes, he's great information, and he's kind of very entertaining at the same time, and he gives many, many lectures. And then there's another clinic that I don't have personal experience with in Northwest United States, True North Clinic, and that's Dr. Goldhammer and a number of other doctors there that treat people with all kinds of diseases and use strictly nutrition and health, holistic health kind of practices. Those are the big ones that are coming to my mind right now. And there's, of course, a number of others, and they do connect. I guess there's one other person that I need to mention, and that is Dr. Neil Barnard, and he is the founder and head of the Physicians Committee for Health, and they have a huge organization, and they've actually filed suits against the government for different things that have been wrong about nutrition and health, and won. They are probably the biggest organization out there protecting people behind the scenes on the legal and the big scale kind of decisions in the world for health and nutrition, and trying to really keep the plant-based focus and keep pharmaceuticals as an option and not the only option. Mm-hmm. And he's been outspoken for years and years and years. And most of these people that I'm talking about are not new to the industry, not new to this thing. They've been doing this for years, and they've been seeing thousands of people. And so when I talk about therapeutic uses of food, I want to go to people that are using food therapeutically. If I'm just talking about what's good for me in health, then reading a book or understanding somebody that is learning it or is a doctor, that's okay. But if I'm going to practice something as a therapy, I want to get the information from people that are using it as a therapy. And that's has been my theory, and has been really sound and really life-changing. And I can't thank them enough. And I guess that's why one of the reasons I'm here is because at some point, success stories need to leave a trail for other people. Mm-hmm. And I stand on their education as I benefited from what they had to offer. And so if someone else could benefit from what we offer, then now we're all in the same, we're all rowing in the same direction, and we all are trying to understand this not from a point of what my product is compared to yours, but what my relationship to health and well-being is to yours. I'm not trying to sell a product or trying to convince you to do one thing or another because it benefits me. I want you to do what benefits you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a very different place to come from, right? than we're used to. Yeah. You know, two things that I want to mention, and one I want to ask you about, too, is when you're talking about the plant-based diet and things like that. The one thing that I do want to mention is that you do a lot of physical labor. Mm. So just in when we think about what we have been taught around protein and building muscle and all of that, that you, on your plant-based diet, the foods that you eat, and, you know, your body's kind of amazing. I know you were on an extended water fast and built your deck during that time.
Right. Right. Yeah.
And it's interesting that a body can be in that place. I think that in and of itself is very fascinating.
Isn't it? It is so fascinating because it is almost a reverse of what we've been taught or what we believe and what we experience. I mean, how many times do you hear somebody say, I better eat a big meal, I need energy for the rest of the day? And really, I think that the meals are only managing our appetite. They're not managing our energy level. And a good example is now I have a step meter on my phone.
Oh, yep.
And so the last fast I did, I was on water. I did 38,000 steps in a day. And I was strictly on water the entire week.
Wow.
So I manage about 20,000 steps a day on my walking the dog and exercise and mowing the grass. And then I also do a lot of physical labor. I'm always lifting and carrying for construction, for gardening, for garbage removal, you know, just all the normal workday stuff. Being a carpenter and a kind of a contractor person, I'm lifting heavy bricks and wood and lumber and, you know, those types of things. And I play tennis 3 or 4 times a week, depending on the week. And I walk in the park every single day, at least once, sometimes twice. That's how I get my 30,000 steps. And, you know, go on a 4-mile walk at least once a day, plus my work. And I think that, again, that's kind of like the food thing. You build, you start with a kind of a protocol, and then as you can expand on it, you expand little by little. You incorporate what version of it can incorporate into your life at this time, and then grow from that. And I think that my energy level goes up because I'm not digesting food. The energy that I'm using to digest food now can go into repairing tissue, cleaning organs, and walking or talking or, you know, all those other things too. But I think that we forget about the amount of energy that our digestive system alone requires for digesting things, and of course then how much energy our brain uses for understanding things, you know.
Right.
Those two things are the big energy users. And what I find when I get out of my eating trap, once my appetite goes away, and which happens in fasting, you lose your appetite, and then your focus becomes this more open. I'm no longer planning my next meal. I'm no longer considering what I'm going to do for breakfast, what I'm going to do for lunch, what I'm going to do for dinner. I'm not digging through the refrigerator and opening up cabinet doors anymore. I just have this more simple ability to focus on building the deck or other things that are happening. A lot of times there's rest. There's always good rest. And I've noticed that the more I do during the day, the better I rest at night.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's definitely, the bad can get worse and the good can get better. And it's a matter of helping the process, helping you in the process, being part of the winning side of the process and not blaming yourself, not getting down about where you're at in the process, and understanding that you are part of the process. And then being able to be your own coach, being able to be the person that is the nicest to yourself rather than the one that's the most judgmental.
Mm-hmm.
And that will help you make those harder decisions when it's cake or not cake. When you're feeling your best, you're probably going to be more likely to make the best decision, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, well, you know, it's an interesting thing because I think sometimes that backfires on us too. we feel good, we feel in celebration, and then we make reward. The cake choice.
Where's the reward?
Right, exactly, right. Exactly.
Right.
Well, I should probably just say, too, when it comes to the fasting piece, you've done a lot of education around fasting to do it well and for yourself. I assume the first few days of fasting are very challenging. So it's not just I'm just going to have water today. All is, you know, well,
right.
That there is a process
right.
That goes into
yeah,
that.
Yeah, there is this very serious process.
Okay.
And I'm in the middle of giving up, punting a fast right now. I started a fast 3 days ago, and my stress levels and life and looking at the next 3 weeks of my life, realized that this is probably not going to work out this time.
Uh-huh.
You know, and to be able to set yourself up for these big goals or to have these ideas and then to be able to draw back and say, well, maybe it's not in the cards and not feel blame about it is so important. And when I learned to do fasting, the first thing I learned was keep it a secret. Don't tell anyone.
Mm.
You know, keep it a secret, because as soon as you put yourself out there, now there's all this other judgment that you put onto it.
Right.
And how much of it is mental and emotional, and really understanding that part has really opened my eyes to what fasting has to offer. I used to keep it a secret, and then I went through this telling everybody about it,
mm-hmm.
and now I'm stuck in this middle place of, okay, how do I want to share it because I think it's beneficial, but I don't want to push it on people or make it difficult for me,
mm-hmm.
and so there's this new thing, and kind of why maybe I didn't bring it up today or really go into deeply about fasting today is because it's a new thing for me now again, and every
mm-hmm.
time I looked at it, it's kind of like a vacation. It's definitely the most affordable option you can do. You know, it's definitely affordable. Water, water, water.
Mm-hmm.
And it definitely has an impact. But those 3 days in or the 5 days out of it, there are struggle, and there's definitely opportunities that it could make. You could make it worse rather than better if you attach some kind of meaning behind it and then don't do it like you think you should. And now, again, it's just the self-blame and a problem. But the fasting, there's definitely good ways to do it. Most of the doctors that I work with would recommend, don't listen to me about it. Go get professional help. Go to a spa or go do something, especially your first time or if you're ill. They want to do blood work and they want to do a lot of things to make sure that you're going to be safe through the process. My experience has been they're pretty picky of who they take because they don't want to take any risks. They won't take really, really, really sick people if they think you're going to suffer when you get there. They're able to be that way. There's a waiting list for these kind of clinics, and it's not inexpensive to go to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I was lucky enough to start young enough and to have enough experience that I feel comfortable going in and out of fast without any real professional advice or monitoring or anything. And I really do trust my body. And people that do trust their body and know that their body's healing will have smashing success with fasting. They really will. It's when we start second-guessing ourselves that we make decisions that then aggravate the problem. You know, breaking a fast or doing things within the fast that aren't necessarily healthy. I've talked to one person that was on a fast and didn't quite feel right, so he thought he'd have a cup of coffee today. Having an empty stomach and drinking a cup of coffee do not go together very well, you know, the caffeine and the acid. And so right when you're in the middle of starting to do some healing, we introduce something that's just not right. So most of the problem is our own messing with the process that causes the problem. I like what one doctor said is, it's difficult, not dangerous.
Mm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's difficult,
yeah.
But not dangerous. So.
Nice. Well, yeah, I just wanted to kind of make the point that it's not a casual thing. You've taken
right.
a lot of steps to do
right.
it in really respectfully to your body.
27 years.
So,
officially,
yeah.
27
wow.
years I've been fasting. And if you added up all the days that I've lived on water, it's over 2 years.
Wow.
Probably
that's
closer to 3 years. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I have two more thoughts and then we'll close because I know I could talk to you forever. The one thought I want to bring us back to is you had mentioned oil being an inflammatory. And I think when I think about that and when I think about what we talk about in cooking and what we hear even about, you know, olive oil, being a healthier option. Because I know multiple people who oil is just, they know it's an inflammatory thing for them. What makes it inflammatory? Yeah, what makes it inflammatory? Let's start there.
Oh, gosh. That would probably be answered better by a chemist or a doctor. But I can tell you how I applied what makes it, my logic for oils are go back to the fiber thing and go back to the natural whole foods plant-based thing. Oil comes from something, so there's a process there that you're extracting it out, and in that extracting process you're making it not the same language to your body that it would be in its whole form, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
So like olive oil would be what people say is healthy because it has the spectrum of oils. It has the omega 3s and 6s and 9s. And so your body doesn't necessarily, the medical profession will not call it unhealthy necessarily because we call the certain omega oils healthy. But if you back up one more step, the idea that this extracted product could be good for you is based on the nature of it, just like we talked about. What did it come from? Where was it stored? What does the quantity and quality of what you're eating, how often are you eating it, and all those other things all play a huge, huge role in saying this oil is healthy or this oil is unhealthy.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the doctors that I'm studying say all oils are bad. All oils. There's other doctors that are saying you need some oil. Healthy fats are good for you. So the difference is healthy fats in oils in a food, in a plant, is different than extracting that oil out of the plant. Eating olives, fresh and healthy, organic, good olives, is completely different than having olive oil. And then having olive oil on your salad in very small amounts is completely different than deep frying a French fry,
mm-hmm.
you know, or pan frying vegetables. And so as soon as you cook those oils, you're changing their molecular makeup, and you not only are they inflammatory, but they're carcinogenic. We haven't even talked about that term. I'll just rip out another term right at the end. But, you know, they're challenging your body.
Mm-hmm.
They're making your body do things outside of its normal routine that cause inflammation or cause some other symptom that tells you you're not, you know, this is not necessarily the best thing for you. Now, not everybody is in the habit of trying to only eat the best thing for them. So how they transition from vegetable oil, canola oil, lard, or any of those other oils to something else is more about their understanding of how their health depends on the good things. And instead of saying, I have to stop eating oil, and saying, I get to eat another apple, or whatever that thing that they like that is healthy for them, it's all mental. It's all mental. And celebrating with cake opposed to celebrating with watermelon is literally a choice. It is a choice. We don't feel it that way at a 10-year-old's birthday.
Right.
It's not going to be understood that way, but it really is that simple. In my understanding, it is that simple. I don't make a lot of friends with that attitude. But it does help people appreciate how important it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my being a sign waving in the wind of a lot of people's momentum of health and understanding of what it is to be healthy, they want to be able to continue to do all the things they do and experience health at the same time, or better health than what they have. And the connection between the two is too hand in glove for that. And most of the time, what our body craves is what the organism and the bioflora of our body wants. And we don't understand it that way. We think that it's our taste buds, and what we think we taste good is because we know what tastes good and what doesn't taste good. And really, it's a much bigger picture than that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and the mindset. That was one of the things I was going to ask you about and touch on, was the whole concept of celebration. How do we transition into that? And it some creativity involved in having sort of that healthier option. Or, yeah, I think, you right. know, I think that that's a big piece. And yep. I'm looking for any any tips well, you've got on that. I mean, you are amazing with just through your transitions of health and some of the healthy stuff that I've seen you make and the creative and simplicity of it. If you're willing to say more about healthy celebration options or healthy treats that you have in your home, because some of them are delicious and they're not hard.
Right. I think it has a lot to do with the environment. It has a lot to do with the environment. If we were headed to a fruit festival this afternoon and it was a bunch of plant-based eaters and all we were going to do is pineapple, watermelon, and other kinds of fruit, we would be looking forward to it. My mm-hmm. mouth is starting to water just thinking about it, mm-hmm. you know? And we would be all there celebrating together and enjoying it together. And that, I think, is a hard struggle when trying to control your environment is already too much work, mm-hmm. you know? That effort of saying, okay, I'd like to sway this conversation to less about consumption and more about simplicity, when consumption is the rule, it's really hard to change that environment to be open to other options. And so how do you, when everyone else is celebrating with cake, enjoy the watermelon?
Mm-hmm.
And that is your own process. How I started out doing it was bringing the watermelon cake along with the other cake and offering it as an option and trying to be the other voice. That takes a lot of energy, and very few people, I think, are going to step up and say, okay, we're going to throw away all that we know and we're going to jump onto this whole other menu plan for my celebration. So there's a happy medium. There's an option. Having more than one choice sometimes challenges people. I know grandma and grandpa expects their birthday party to go X, Y, and Z because that's how they've always went.
Mm-hmm.
And just having the wrong kind of wrapping paper might upset them, let alone completely changing the food choices is a challenge. Then that's when it's about how we communicate and how we get along with each other more than our food expectations, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm just flashing back to all the people I've had these conversations with as far as, you know, people telling me, I don't understand. You know, I just don't understand because I get yelled at if I buy the wrong cake, let alone cake, you know? So it's really hard, and having options is even threatening to people. Why did you even bring that? It's challenging what I have, you
mm-hmm.
know? And so, again, that's about the relationship that you have with that person. And if the energy of bringing all that extra is not in your wheelhouse, if it's, you know, not comfortable for you, then bringing enough for yourself or being able to abstain completely from that option. Although I will say at this point, it seems like more and more people are food sensitive or have some knowledge of it. So having gluten-free option or having something like that seems to be more and more common.
Mm-hmm.
So that extra option is maybe already, that thing has already kind of surfaced. And so then bringing the extra healthy thing or that ultra healthy thing becomes a little more acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what a lot of times I'll default to when I'm in an environment of extreme one kind of way is probably not the healthiest thing to do. I'll just take my extreme the completely opposite way, where if it's all really bad food, I'll bring the most healthiest thing I can possibly bring, you know, just because that's a good
counterbalance,
you know. And I think that most people enjoy your contribution opposed to judging you as trying to steer it differently. But that's the tightrope that I think most people are afraid of is
mm-hmm.
if I come saying what I just learned, this new information that I have, and I'm bringing it back to my family, I'm going to get, you know, this is not going to go over very well.
Right.
Yeah.
And then there's usually in those situations, there always seems to be a couple people who sneak in and go, thank you so much for bringing something healthy. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So you usually will please a couple people.
Yes.
If nothing else, there will be somebody really grateful.
Yeah.
But it is a shift.
As I work with more and more people, it seems like the people that are so more stuck in what they believe is right for their diet or for whatever it is are the ones that have the health issue, you know, that are suffering with something. And when you say, have you considered this? And they say, absolutely not. I will never consider that. You kind of walk away thinking, well, I understand. You know, I understand. I wish it was different, but it does make sense to me. I wish I was wrong, but I understand. You know?
Right.
And then that one thing that you're unwilling to consider as an option, until you consider it as an option, it's not going to be there.
Right. And even as just an option, a potential.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Do you work with people individually as coaching or assisting or anything like that?
Rarely. I have a few clients right now that I see on a irregular basis, we'll say. Maybe a few weeklies, a couple every month. And I've had a few folks that I've actually literally prepared meals for over periods of time. Mm-hmm. But I don't advertise. I don't really solicit it because I really think it's a calling. This is not something that I can sell someone on.
Right.
This is something that they're already sold and looking for help.
Right.
And so if there's people in my daily life that are asking questions, I drop what I'm doing and I help. But I'm not looking for people on the outside. A lot of people, they already know what's right and wrong, and I don't want to get in that kind of a competition with those folks.
Sure.
So, okay. But I do enjoy working with other people more for my own education and for more, gives me more background and more understanding on an individual by individual basis.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have that, you know, I don't have any necessarily degree, and I don't have insurance to run a business like that, and I don't do business cards or anything like that. It's more of a helping people help themselves.
Nice.
Yep. Okay. And I'm a big do-it-yourselfer. I cut my own hair. I do just about everything myself. I have massotherapy, things that I do for myself, and my own exercises and my own chiropractic kind of things, and I think that's a really good start. But I think ultimately, when you're suffering, you need help.
Right.
You know, everyone should reach out for help.
Huge. Yeah. That's so true.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. This has been so much fun. And I could probably go on forever and talk to you because I know there's so much stuff in your head. That is amazing.
Yeah.
So I appreciate you sharing your story.
You.
And if it can hopefully reach anybody else who just, sometimes when we're challenged, it's nice to know there's somebody else going, okay, they got through it. I just have to, how am I going to do this? How am I going to find this within myself? Yeah. I think that's really
Your
huge.
Body's always healing.
Oh.
Your body's always healing. Always.
It's a process.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much, Jim.
Judy.
I'm finding myself seriously craving going to a fruit festival, like pineapples and apples and perhaps I'm just channeling a song that was out like a year or two ago called Pen Pineapple Apple Pen, so maybe it needs to be a fruit fest plus office supply convention. This sounds lovely to me. I would love going to a fruit fest and office supply convention, if you know me and my love of office supplies. There was a song out, if you have kids, you maybe know this, called Pen Pineapple Apple Pen. I'll put the link down at the bottom of the show notes. That's quite fun, mostly silly, very catchy. So be careful when you watch it because you're just stuck in your head forever. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. I had a great time hanging out with Jim, and I always do. He's always fun to be around and just shares so much of his experience and knowledge, and it's always a good time. So I'm grateful that he sat down to share his story to hopefully benefit and inspire anybody who it catches. So please, as always, thank you for listening and share to anyone who might find this information interesting, helpful. Check out the rest of the podcasts at wellnessrenpodcast.com. You can see all the podcasts there, everything that we've done up until now and going forward. You can sign up for weekly emails. Basically, whenever we put out a podcast, it comes out, tells you the name, what the podcast is about, and a link to it so you can easily click play and take a listen. You can also find us on iTunes.
Just look for the Wellness Renaissance podcast. And if you like what you hear, you can go to the webpage, the Wellness Ren podcast, and you'll see menu item that says support the podcast. Click on there. You're going to pull up a lot of Amazon links. If you are an Amazon user, you can click on any one of those links. You don't have to buy what you clicked on, but whatever you do purchase within that shopping trip, a tiny little portion of the sale, not an extra charge to you, but of your actual sale, will go to support the podcast. So thank you so very much for the folks who have done that, and I invite more of you to take those extra clicks, and certainly sincerely do appreciate that so very much. So thank you all. Jim mentioned a lot of different people and places and books and resources in the podcast. And if you do go to the show notes, you will find links to, I think, pretty much all of them there. We also definitely invite you to interact, be it on the podcast page itself on the website. If you have any comments or questions, feel free to throw them out there. Also on Facebook. Facebook.com/WellnessRen, or you can search for Wellness Renaissance. We definitely welcome the interaction of the community to connect with each other and, again, share resources and share information and experiences. That's what the podcast is looking to do. That is what we would love to create within the Wellness Renaissance community. You are invited. Have a wonderful week. Definitely look forward to talking to you next time. And until then, may you find more pieces that fit perfectly into your health and wellness puzzle. Take care, be well, and mantra for the day, my body is always healing.